from the halls of every school in Michigan, this is School Talks on 760 WJR with respected educator Dr. Robert Livernoy, inspiring parents, students, and educators with conversations on all things education. Sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, and by Clark Construction. Now, take your seats. Class is in session. Here's Robert.
As part of our continued focus on getting back to school this fall, we have an exciting lineup of guests on the program, including Michelle Volker, an instructional coach from Warren Woods Public Schools, Anthony Viviano Wilkerson, elementary principal from Warren, Anchor Bay High School principal Mike McKenzie, and Macomb County's school safety coordinator, Jim Burke. All this and more are coming up. This is School Talks on 760 WJR. Welcome back to School Talks. Michelle Volker, K-12 instructional coach from Warren Woods Public Schools. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Bob.
So in your role as instructional coach, you have been part of an initiative known as Kagan Cooperative Learning. Help us understand what makes it different from what we might see in a traditional classroom.
Absolutely. The focus of Kagan Cooperative Learning is to structure the interactions that our students are having with the goal of improving student engagement. So we're teaching students how to work as teams, to build trust, and to focus on learning together. It's really an awesome way to learn. Mm-hmm. When you think of a traditional classroom, you're likely imagining a teacher at the front of the room. Students are sitting in desks and all in rows. And when teachers pose questions in those traditional rooms, likely some students raise their hands and others don't. When a teacher calls on just one student, what I think we should all be wondering is, what about everyone else? In a Kagan Cooperative Learning classroom, it forces us out of that traditional model. And this is the type of work we are doing in Warren Woods, and it's work I'm really proud to be a part of. A cooperative learning classroom is one where teachers think strategically about the type of learning they want their students to be doing, and then they plan cooperative learning structures around that type of work. So in this example, you know, replace posing a question and just calling on one student with a round robin structure, for example. We give our students the opportunity to think about their answers, to share them with their teams, and then when we're ready as a teacher to hear what those answers are, not only has the student been given the opportunity to think about their answer and to share, but they've also heard from their peers, mm-hmm. which gives them the opportunity to expand their thinking and to revise that answer. We increase that accountability when we ask our kids to share something that they heard in their team too. It's a really important social skill that cooperative learning builds in. And for parents listening right now, this is the type of learning I would say you really want your kids to be doing.
You know, with the emphasis in the workforce on working in teams, this seems like a natural segue. So what brought your district to Kagan as an initiative, and why do you feel it is an important focus given the current state of the district?
Kagan has been around for more than 50 years. Dr. Spencer Kagan did a lot of research at the university level. And Warren Woods had a team of teachers trained in Kagan about 10 years ago. And when we examined district needs 3 years ago for ESSER 3, teachers overwhelmingly named student engagement as an area of concern. Schools were seeing issues with behavior, a lack of social skills, and students who were struggling academically coming back to in-person learning. So because cooperative learning can address all of those needs, mm-hmm. a five-year Kagan training plan was put into place, and instructional coaching was put in to support it, and that's my role.
That's your role, yes. And you mentioned ESSER 3. Mm-hmm. Just for our listening audience, ESSERs is a acronym for federal funding that districts received during the COVID pandemic, mm-hmm. and it came with certain expectations. So that's a really good connection, and more importantly, a really good use of that kind of funding to help students. What challenges might a teacher face in trying to roll this out in his or her classroom?
Absolutely. This type of learning, when a traditional teacher hears it, it takes a bit of a leap of faith, and it takes that tenacity to continue to work on it. It takes some time to implement. A lot of times teachers are worried that students within their teams are going to share incorrect answers, or that they'll get off task, or that the teacher loses control of their classroom environment. And for those fears, I would really say to remember the management and the routines that we're embedding with our students. We're modeling and reinforcing how kids can coach their peers, how they can hold each other accountable, and how they can respectfully disagree, which I think is a huge skill for our kids nowadays. So the classroom using structures may not necessarily be a quiet classroom, but it is one that is entirely focused on learning. I've also experienced the perception that implementation will take too much time for the teacher and too much effort. And in my role as an instructional coach, I've worked in a variety of ways to support that. I've planned alongside my teachers where I ask them, you know, give me an example of a call-on-one question. Can we replace that with a cooperative conversation? I've created materials to help support team building and class building, because even though Kagan will often say you don't need stuff to do cooperative learning, sometimes you do need physical materials. So I took away that roadblock for my teachers. Some other teachers have just wanted to see it work with their kids, because in their minds, you know, it looks great in PD, but it doesn't work for my kids. And I jumped in and modeled the structures. And I had a reluctant teacher this year say, gosh, I wish I would have tried. This has really worked well. And look how excited my kids are. And now I have teachers asking to use my templates to create their own materials. We just have to meet the staff where they are, because the goal of this implementation is to get them one step closer to that fidelity level that we really want them to get to, which is why our most recent efforts in Warren Woods is to train teachers and administrators in what they call Kagan coaching, which is kind of like athletic coaching. You observe a structure and you make fine-tuned changes in the moment, and we're excited to add that in Warren Woods this year.
Fantastic. And, you know, you raise an important point. Given education has been for decades really good at starting things, especially given the symbiosis that is in and around education from all the different stakeholders. And given that level of change and symbiosis, what kind of metrics will you be looking for to measure the effectiveness of this as you move through the school year?
Like I said, this is a five-year plan, and Warren Woods, and I will start by saying, just qualitatively, the feeling that you get in a cooperative learning classroom is incredible. We are really proud to say our youngest learners are using cooperative learning structures. We have our high school that is using it in culinary arts, PE, our resource rooms, all the way up through our advanced placement courses. Our alternative high schools are benefiting from those things. I recently had a middle school science teacher. She committed to using a structure called Quiz Trade at towards the end of the year. And she emailed me saying her class average had gone from less than 70% to over 90%. It was the same students in front of her, but we had just deliberately implemented cooperative learning. Our high school English department, our SAT prep unit, our 11th graders responded that they loved prep. And I think to have a group of 11th graders say that they enjoyed test prep is a win in itself. But our College Board results showed that this cohort of students had scored closer to state and national averages than they ever had on a College Board test. And I would attribute that to the use of cooperative learning.
With us on the program is Michelle Volker, instructional coach from Warren Woods Public Schools. Michelle, what advice would you give to another school district that might be considering this engagement model?
I would say that we need to acknowledge that it is a radical shift from what a traditional classroom might look like. And as you're looking into a method for increasing student engagement, we need to acknowledge also that Kagan is not a program you're purchasing. This is a way of functioning within your district. You can utilize this strategically with any content standards in any age level. So it cannot be a one and done PD. This needs to be something that we're providing your staff with proper training and ongoing support. and make this living within your classrooms, within your staff meetings. I even had our school board engage in it. And that's a really important shift as far as the culture of the district. For my administrators, my advice would be to engage in the training. Understand the structure so that you can lead alongside your teachers. And when they have concerns, hear them, but provide that positive pressure, because the gains that you're going to make are huge. So I guess my advice would be to commit to the hard work and commit to cooperative learning, because when your students learn to build skills to communicate, think critically, and take academic risks, they're really going to be contributing citizens as they move forward in life.
And you know, when you think about how disengaging education became during the pandemic, what a wonderful opportunity to not only bring them back to school, but foster a different type of engagement. And what might you say to a teacher who's reluctant to pursue this type of instruction with their students?
I have had those situations where we have reluctant teachers. And like I said previously, you really need to meet them where they are. For many of them, I have gotten them to give an opportunity to simply replace a call on one question with a cooperative conversation. And in those situations, they have seen the type of answers that you can get when you give students time to process and to prepare their answer versus a call on one answer. That's what hooked many of them. And others just simply need to see it.
And you know, that point raises an important one, that in a system like this, the teacher becomes much more of a facilitator.
Absolutely.
As opposed to just a conveyor of information. For so long, education was the teacher transmits information and the students give it back in the form of a test or a speech or a paper or essay.
Yes.
And the fundamental philosophy of this is so much different and seemingly productive, especially how it engages all of the students in that capacity. One last question. If I were an outsider coming to a school and I come upon a classroom that is fully engaged in this, what might I see that looks different from maybe how I was educated?
The traditional setup of a classroom with desks and rows is not conducive to cooperative learning. You're going to see students in teams, or at least in pairs. You are going to hear conversation. You might see the teacher standing off to the side and circulating. Those are the things, like you said, the teacher is a facilitator in these conversations.
Yeah. Thank you. And it's wonderful. That's all the time we have for today, Michelle. But your information on student engagement makes a lot of sense given the challenge of keeping students on task. Coming up after the break is Wilkerson Elementary Principal Anthony Viviano. You're listening to School Talks on 760 WJR.
Welcome back to School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy, sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran Real Point, Collins and Blaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, and by Clark Construction. Once again at the head of the class, Dr. Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is longtime veteran elementary principal Anthony Viviano, who's here to share a perspective with us on what it means to bring an entire school full of children back after they've been off for 11 or 12 weeks, which is obviously more than just another day in the neighborhood. Welcome to the program, Anthony.
Oh, thank you for having me, Dr. Livernoy.
So, what strategies does a school use to help students transition smoothly back into the school routine after summer break?
I'd say probably the most important strategy that we use to start our school year is to ensure that all the staff know that the best chance at a smooth start is to be as visible and engaging as possible. And we really take an all-hands-on-deck attitude just so that we can make sure that the kids have the best feeling as they walk through the front doors.
That's a really important aspect for kids who might socially be fearful of returning to school, especially in your school. You may have at any given grade level numerous students who are dropping into the school for the very first time.
Absolutely.
It's not as though everyone is neatly matriculating from the previous grade level. So that whole social support makes a lot of sense. How do teachers prepare for the start of a new school year to make sure that things are positive and engaging for students?
You know, I think it looks different across the board for the different types of, you know, teachers and educators that are in the building. Many teachers' wheels are turning all the time. You know, I feel like sometimes it's difficult to turn that off and debrief and take a deep breath. But you know what? It looks different for everyone. And some of them even start that cursory planning back in June at the end of the previous school year, mm-hmm. unless you're a brand new teacher and walking into your first classroom, which really could be happening as well. You know, you're always thinking. And I think it looks in a variety of different ways, whether it's collaboration with their colleagues, like, oh, I want to do this differently next year. And then they make notes, you know, post-it notes are life at some point in time for everybody. Or they might have seen some kind of a media reel where they're like, oh, that's a great idea. I mean, I personally, that's a great way for me to kind of blend both, new thoughts and new approaches to things just from what other people are sharing as well. Formal collaboration takes place as soon as we, hit the ground running with our official back to school time. And that's where teachers really take that time to think about the different ways that they're going to engage their students.
Mm-hmm. And that's typically the first couple of days of the school year. Teachers are without students mm-hmm. Doing professional development and getting ready. You made a point that made me think back when my children were in elementary school, there was a high priority on the teacher, say, in third grade had my daughter, that teacher had an opportunity to know who the teacher was for the next year. And they actually had an opportunity, as you said, in June to talk about the students who will be on that mm-hmm. roster. Now, given the level of transiency that's in schools now, it's not as neatly packaged as it once was, but that whole handoff is absolutely critical to helping the teacher get off on the right foot. So what kind of support is available for students who might struggle with readjusting after a long summer break?
You know, elementary students in our district are really fortunate to have some of the best educators and support staff to help them every day. The best thing that we can do to help all our students adjust after the long break, like summer, is to take the necessary steps to help them feel welcome while establishing that culture for learning. Those two pieces help to connect that puzzle.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that speaks volumes to when children come back to school, they're coming back with an incredible range of experiences over the summer. Some have the opportunity and the resources to travel and do different things. Many are just at home during the summer. And it really makes me appreciate what teachers have to absorb. Just imagine you're a school teacher and a 30-year class had the opportunity to travel all over the United States, go up north, learn about different things, and be engaged all summer. Another third pretty much stayed home and played in the backyard and those kinds of things. And then maybe another third are students brand new to the school. Mm-hmm. That is quite a mixed bag of students for a teacher starting off the school year. So it's just absolutely critical that we understand the impact of that long break. So on the parent side, how do you as a principal communicate with parents and guardians to prepare them and their children for the new school year?
I think one of the most important parts of my job is communicating, whether it's with the parents or the staff or the students, and just making sure that we're helping everyone to understand the priorities to start the school year. So while we're all celebrating the end of that, school year and the impending summer break, I always send a message saying, hey, save the date. These are some things to think about. We also do things such as kindergarten jumpstart so that we can help some of our youngest learners kind of get a window into what school looks like. And what my staff and I have found is that really helps to reduce the fears and the upset feelings dramatically by just having them spend a couple hours in our school before that first school bell. I also do an annual Wildcat Day where we invite the families to come in. Our school pictures happen that day, and then they get their teacher assignment, as well as they get all of our back to school information. So it's kind of a one-stop shop that we hold every year, and we've been having more and more success with that every year.
Mm-hmm. And on the program with us is Anthony Viviano, Wilkerson Elementary Principal. So Anthony, from a social-emotional learning perspective, what kinds of opportunities are available in the school throughout the school year to support students? What kind of staff and or programs do you have available for children as they navigate on the social-emotional spectrum?
You know, we really do extend that all hands on deck you know, opportunity throughout the whole staff. We are fortunate to have a full-time, you know, school counselor, and we have engaged and invested our time in the Positivity Project, which provides character education support as well as social emotional support. Mm-hmm. And those are the types of things that we have that we're driving throughout the whole year in terms of everything that we do and we say and we live and we help the kids with, you know, maintain that support.
And I can appreciate how that walks right alongside the support that teachers need and receive in managing, in your case, such a diverse set of needs of students as they return to school. It really and truly is a mixed bag. What are your goals or priorities for the upcoming school year for Wilkerson? What are some of the big things in front of you this year?
We're definitely looking at continuing to develop our positive behavior and intervention support model. So that we can continue to help support our students and the staff that works with them daily. We're looking at in continuing to increase what we do with our students academically and how we approach that. So, you know, the level of engagement and the type of engagement and specifically which content we're working toward to help meet their needs, as well as just making sure that we recognize that school is someplace that we want all of our students to be at.
Mm-hmm. And you raise a good point about positive behavior reinforcement as opposed to the traditional punishment base, mm-hmm. Which time and again has proven to be ineffective. Anthony Viviano, I want to thank you for joining us on the program. After a word from our sponsors, we will have Anchor Bay High School Principal Mike McKenzie on the program with a back-to-school perspective for high schools. You're listening to School Talks on 760 WJR. Welcome back to School Talks. Joining us now is Mike McKenzie, a longtime veteran high school principal from Anchor Bay High School. Mike brings a wealth of experience to work every day as he manages one of the state's largest high schools, which brings, I'm sure, some significant rewards and challenges. Welcome to the program, Mike.
Hi, Bob. Thank you very much for having me today.
I appreciate that. Let's start with how many students at Anchor Bay High School?
Right now, we're hovering right around 1750. We have about 140 staff supporting those students. The area of Anchor Bay is really growing, and we anticipate being close to 2,000 within the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, doing a little research on your high school, part of the reason I wanted you on the show is I think everyone can appreciate how difficult nowadays it is to find a plumber or an electrician or someone that can do that type of trade work. And in Anchor Bay Schools, tell us a little bit about your career and technical education program and the pathways that you're having students pursue.
Yeah, thanks. We're in the process of moving to career pathways in our building and in our district. The emphasis is on helping students gain an understanding of different careers that they might want to take. I don't know how you were when you were in high school. I had an idea of what I wanted to do. I went to Michigan State and earned a degree and then decided I wanted to do something totally different. And what we're trying to do is to give kids the opportunity in high school to learn about different careers so they have a better idea of what they want to do when they leave school, whether it's going into the skilled trades, directly to the workforce, the military, or college. We're hoping that they have a focus and a plan on what they want to do. And at Anchor Bay, we're very proud. We have 17 career technical education programs. And beginning this year, students will be picking a career pathway. And those career pathways are in the fields of arts and communication, business management, marketing and technology, engineering, manufacturing, and technology with natural resources and agriculture, and then health sciences and human services. So every student will pick a career pathway, and then we will help them gain an understanding of what it means to have a profession or a job in one of those pathways. Mm-hmm. Whether students are college bound or skilled trades, we're going to give them as much information as possible to help them make a decision. One thing I've learned over the years is some of these programs, you know, we have 17 CTE programs. It's just as important for a student to take them to realize something they don't want to do than it is for something they do want to do. And very often kids say, you know what, I think I want to be a doctor. And they'll take a health occupation class. And at the end of the class, they're like, I don't think I want to be a doctor. And that is just as valuable in helping them figure out which direction they want to go. It's really something all schools do. I think at Anchor Bay, we're doing a really good job of addressing it, not only with the students who are going in the skilled trades, but helping the students who are going into college figure out what they want to do.
Mm-hmm. And you know, you bring up a good point about helping kids know what they don't want to do. Mm-hmm. I've known quite a few students over the years who head into the engineering track thinking they're going to go and get a bachelor's in engineering and end up in a skilled trade such as an auto mechanic or some other more application-based profession. And what an excellent use of time and resources at the high school level. What kinds of certifications can students earn while they're a student at Anchor Bay High School across these pathways?
Yeah, there's a big push from the state where they're going to want the career technical classes to have a certification component to them. At Anchor Bay, we have a number of programs that already have that certification. So, you know, an example is our auto program. There are 7 levels in the ASE certification process where kids can, you know, it might be brakes. So they learn about brakes and then they can take a certification test. And if they pass, they get that particular certification. And with auto, there's actually 7 different levels. Building trades is one of our other programs. There's certifications that students can earn in that. We have a patient care technician, something we're really proud of. We had 14 kids take the certification test last year. 13 passed, and I believe the one that didn't pass missed it by 1 question, and they were going to retake it this summer, and we fully expect them to pass as well. We have an early childhood program. That, too, can lead to some certifications. And then our business and marketing also has some certifications that students can earn right now.
And from a certification perspective, it opens multiple doors for them, as I understand. What kinds of advantages do students have earning a certification in high school when they leave and pursue whatever opportunity?
Absolutely. Anytime you get a certification, regardless of where you are in your career, it's going to open doors up for you. Mm-hmm. So for our students, it could give them the edge of getting a scholarship. It could give them the edge in getting enrolled at the university of their choice. If they go directly into the workplace, it gives them a leg up on a candidate who doesn't have that certification. And in almost all cases, it leads to a higher starting pay if they are going into the workforce. Mm-hmm. The other thing is just the reward of earning a certification. You know, you see the pride on the kid's face when they can hold up a certificate saying, I have earned this. Mm-hmm. And it's similar to like when they get their diploma. But it, in some ways, the kids value that even more than the diploma. And it's just a really rewarding thing to see.
Mm-hmm. And Mike McKenzie, Anchor Bay High School principal, joining us on the program. Mike, where are these? You have 17 different programs. Where are these programs housed in the district?
The majority of our programs are housed in the high school. We have some in our middle schools. We passed a really large bond issue in 2022, thanks to the voters of Anchor Bay School District. We passed a $169 million bond issue. And a lot of that, it goes to things like school security, which is always the number one priority. But a lot of the money, especially at the high school, is going to these career technical programs. So we're moving the programs that are at the middle school, we're moving them to the high school. We're building a brand new state-of-the-art auto shop, a brand new state-of-the-art culinary program. Our newest CTE program that we've added is welding, and the space isn't quite finished yet, but we're going to roll it, kind of slow roll it out this year with about 20 students. The encouraging thing is when students signed up for classes last spring, we had almost 180 kids sign up for welding.
Wow.
And eventually we'll get to the point where we'll be able to accommodate all those 180 requests. And it just speaks to the need for these programs. I know when I started in education, the emphasis was on going to college and university. And sometimes skilled trades weren't emphasized. And I think schools have done a great job shifting, as has the state of Michigan, and helping students understand what career pathways there are with regard to the skilled trades. You mentioned having trouble finding a plumber and an electrician. If you are able to find them, paying for them is a whole different battle, because they are expensive. Kids can make a great earning, a great livelihood doing some of these skilled trades. And it's really opened the door for many students to just succeed, to find their passion.
Anchor Bay High School Principal Mike McKenzie, best of luck for a great school year and keep up the good work. Up next on the program, we will hear from Macomb County School Safety Coordinator Jim Burke on a difficult but important topic, school safety. With that, let's take a break, and we'll be back right after this as you're listening to School Talks on 760 WJR.
School Talks on WJR is sponsored by Wakely Associates, Point Moran Real Point, Collins and Blaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, and by Clark Construction. Now let's get back to class. Once again, your host, former Superintendent Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Mr. Jim Burke, School Safety Coordinator with Macomb County's Emergency Management and Communications. Welcome to the program, Jim.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you very much. So, Jim, how did you come into this role as the school safety coordinator?
Back in 2018, my office, the Macomb County Emergency Management, partnered with the Macomb Intermediate School District to apply for a federal grant through the Department of Justice. It was a nationwide competitive grant. There were hundreds of local government agencies, school districts, first responders. But basically, there were funding available for school safety. Macomb County and the MASD partnered, representing all the public school districts in Macomb County, and applied for it. And we were very fortunate to receive it. That allowed us to hire three school safety coordinators, and basically we were able to hire three people through my office that were totally focused on school safety throughout the county, helping all of our public, private, and charter schools.
What a great use of resources. So in your role as school safety coordinator, tell us a little bit about how the county supports and works with not only individual school districts, but I imagine also with local law enforcement.
Yeah, in our position as through the Emergency Management Office, we have direct daily contact with all the different agencies, local government, the first responders. So it's a unique position that we have as emergency management. But there's a 25-year plus close relationship in Macomb County with all of our public school districts. There's a countywide school safety committee that's at least been going along that long. And what we're able to do is take these school safety coordinators, and we had a couple missions at first. Number one was to develop a countywide emergency operation plan template for all of our schools. That was developed, drafted, the superintendents looked at it, and we were able to implement that. We were also able to create a countywide risk and vulnerability assessment tool. It's kind of critical in emergency operation planning to come in, take a look at your school, see if there's any vulnerabilities, try and identify them, and then use the information gathered from that as you go forward with millages, with bonds, grant funding to try and increase safety at the schools.
Mm-hmm. And are there, given the kinds of things that you just mentioned, are there any specific state laws that require school districts to have plans to respond to these different kinds of crises?
Yeah, Michigan has what's called Public Act 436. Basically, there's a bunch of sections, criteria in there that are required. Public schools are required to meet it. So that was one of our critical points of interest that we began with, is to make sure that the emergency operation plan met all of the requirements of that. Then we were able to take that, give it to the schools. They've adopted it, customized it for their own use. One of the big things we're focusing on with that then is to take that and develop a tabletop exercises and other, you know, full-scale drills with our schools as we go forward now for the next year or two, to go into each individual school building and work with the staffs on their emergency plans.
Mm-hmm. And that's given the number of schools in the county, not only an important task, but a sizable one. So with respect to those kinds of plans, schools, as I understand it, can adopt different ways to respond
to a crisis. And as you know, school safety is on the minds of everyone, given the recent tragedies, both here in Michigan and across the country. And help us understand a little bit about the different types of plans or ways that schools can approach a crisis.
Basically, all active violence protocols, emergency response protocols for like an active violence situation are based on from the federal model of run, hide, fight. There are other companies that have taken it, ALICE, ALERT, AVERT, there are different things, and they're very good, but they're all based on the central concept of number one is the critical thing that we try to stress with the schools is awareness. You can have a binder, it's, you know, a foot wide sitting on a shelf, but if no one ever looks at it and uses it, it doesn't do anybody any good. So what we really try and do is have people have the awareness, and we're able to, because we have the staffing, to go into every individual school building, work with the principal, work with the staff, find out what their concerns are, and then what we're doing now is developing, like I said, tabletop exercises and able to go back into the schools now and develop drills and training. And the biggest thing, like I said, is awareness. If you have a plan that's never drilled, doesn't do anybody good. Our schools have been great with working with their staff, so the administration allowing their people to have the time to talk to us and work with us. And the critical thing is whether it's you're at a school, a grocery store, a movie theater, is awareness. If something is happening, you should try and pre-plan. Like, try to make it in your head, what are you going to do if something should happen? Where are the exits? Where do I go? What would I do? And then be able to react to that. And that's, I think, one of the critical things that we do with the schools.
Mm-hmm. Jim Burke here, school safety coordinator with Macomb County's Emergency Management and Communications. The idea of having different options with regard to a crisis plan really makes me appreciate back in the day, I think all of us are familiar with what we would call the traditional fire drill, where the bell goes off, everyone stands up and knows exactly what to do, what door to go out, everyone would go outside, you know, maybe 10, 15 feet from the building and wait for the bell to ring and then come back in. And when I think about how linear that process is and how different that is from these kinds of plans, it really speaks to your point about how important it is that staff have the capacity to make decisions in any given crisis. Which brings me to another question. What role, as you know, many schools have invested in security cameras, and what roles now do security cameras play in school districts?
That's a really great program that we offer. We work with, through our sheriff's department, through ComTech, our dispatch. But basically, we now have the ability to allow schools to have a real-time input into our dispatch center. So even just a couple years ago, cameras were there basically to record an incident. Law enforcement could go back and see what it was. But with the new technology, we have the ability to actually go real-time live if something's happening. So if, God forbid, there was an active violence incident at a school, that our dispatch would be able to bring that incident up live so that the first responders have a very accurate picture of what's happening to help locate a suspect, or if there are victims in different areas of the building, that our dispatchers are able to access all the different cameras and all the different views in a really critical, important program.
Jim Burke, school safety coordinator with Macomb County's Emergency Management and Communications Office. I want to thank you very much for joining us on the program today, and I look forward to a safe start to a great school year, and I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you, Dr. Livermore. We wanted to just congratulate you on a very distinguished career in Macomb County. You've been a leader in Macomb County in safety with the kids, and we appreciate it. And safety of our kids is number one throughout the county.
Jim Burke, Macomb County School Safety Coordinator, thanks so much for joining us on the program today. With just about every school back in session this week, I want to offer a tip for parents. Encourage your children to ask for help at school, because it makes their lives so much easier in so many ways. We'll leave it there for now, but remember, there are two ways to spell one and three ways to spell two. Till next time, this is School Talks on 760 WJR.